Welcome to the Fraudian Slip, the Identity Theft Resource Center's podcast, where we talk about all things identity compromise, crime, and fraud that impact people and businesses. I'm James Lee, the COO of the ITRC. Thanks for joining us today. Longtime followers of this and our sister podcast know that I am an unrepentant fan of Shakespeare. Since playwrights get to take creative license, I'm sure Will today would change the warning he made famous in Julius Caesar to beware the Ides of April. April 15th is not just the deadline for filing federal income taxes for individuals. It is a driving force each year for professional identity criminals and tax cheats alike. With about 10 days to file this year's tax returns or an extension, it's not too late to become a victim of tax-related identity fraud or avoid becoming one. But identity-related tax fraud is not limited to January to April each year. Tax scams and IRS impersonation scams happen all year. Here to talk about all the ways criminals manage to steal money and trust each year from taxpayers is Arlene Good, a senior liaison with the Internal Revenue Service and the ITRC's own CEO, Eva Velasquez. Welcome, Eva.
Pleasure to be here, James. Thanks for having me back.
And welcome, Arlene.
Thank you, James. I appreciate the invite, and I look forward to speaking with you.
Well, this is one of those topics we could probably talk about forever, because it's an annual event, but it's also always changing. I'm going to start with you, Eva, with a question, and just sort of to set the stage. Tax time is always a time when we hear from victims of identity crimes. So what's the sort of the current state of play? And how has that changed over time?
Well, it actually hasn't changed all that much over the years. As an organization that hears directly from the victims, they pretty much tell us the same thing. They find out that they are a victim often because they've gone to file and they're told, oh, somebody else has already filed, and they don't understand. Sometimes they are able to get through the filing process and then they find out that they've maybe claimed a new dependent and there's an issue with claiming that dependent. There's another tax return filed in the name and it's a minor. Sometimes it's a child, you know, a baby. And then the last way, and this has changed a little bit, more people are getting notifications that are stating someone attempted to file. Now, back all those years ago when this really first became a problem, there wasn't that much of it going on because the incident rates were so high. But the IRS has gotten much better about, they put in a lot of protections and fraud detections. And so they are stopping some of those fraudulent returns. And then they're notifying the actual legitimate taxpayer, hey, somebody tried to file in your name, but we caught it. So we do get more of those phone calls now where people will ask us, hey, is this legit? What does this actually mean? And we'll walk through the process. But that's really what it looks like from the victim perspective.
Arlene, I'm going to bring you in. And full disclosure, I sit on the IRS's Security Summit, which is a group of public sector, private sector, nonprofit organizations that work with the IRS on these issues from cybersecurity all the way through privacy and these identity issues as well. Eva mentioned it, there really has been a lot of work at the IRS to try to reduce both the number and the impacts of these fraudulent kind of returns, especially around identity. But tell us what really has been going on and how you've done it.
Well, thanks, Jim. You know, I'm glad you mentioned that you sit on the Security Summit. That's great to know because we're always talking about the Security Summit and partnering with other agencies. But what we've done, and this started around 2022, where the IRS has expanded the Identity Protection PIN, which is an opt-in program to all taxpayers. In the past, you had to be a victim of identity theft, where someone tried to file a fraudulent tax return, and then you had to complete an application in order for you to receive an IP PIN. But now you can opt in, any taxpayer can opt into the program as long as you can verify your identity. the ID PIN, which is the identity protection PIN, is a 6-digit code that's similar to a Social Security number, and it's known to the taxpayer and to IRS. And what this does, it helps prevent identity thieves from filing fraudulent tax returns using the taxpayer's personal identifiable information, such as their Social Security number, which had caused in the past delays in refunds or releasing refund checks in the hands of fraudsters. So this program is a voluntary program, and the taxpayer must pass through a rigorous identity verification process. If taxpayers are filing like a joint return and they have a spouse or they may have dependents, the dependents are, and the spouse is also eligible, even though they may not be a victim, but they could be a victim and not even know that they're a victim. And so as long as they can verify their identities, they can also get an IP PIN. And the IP PIN is only valid for one calendar year. So we will submit, we will issue a new IP PIN each tax year, where the taxpayer can put that either on their electronically filed tax return or a paper tax return. And yes, we still have taxpayers that are filing paper tax returns. So they can use that there, and also make sure that they keep the IP PIN close to them. They don't share it with anyone. They would only give that to a trusted tax provider. And so when I say trusted, that means that that's someone who is signing the tax return, that they have, or saying that they have prepared your return, they have sign it with their PIN number, and it's not legitimate use for any type of tax scammers. So you only share that information with a tax provider that's going to prepare your return. You keep that under closed rims, and then of course we'll send you a new one for the tax season. So just make sure that everyone be aware that they're stealing the IP PINs also. So that's why we're advising the taxpayers to make sure you keep that close to you. And you can visit irs.gov, just type in IP PIN to get an IP PIN on our website.
Eva, you know, that just fraudulent tax returns is not the only thing we see. What are the kind of scams are we seeing that involve the IRS?
I first want to just comment really quick and say we were thrilled when we saw the IRS move the IP PIN from sort of a pilot program only available to victims and making it available to the public. It's such a good move. And we were singing that from the hilltop. So we tell everybody, get their IP PIN. We think it's a great tool. But in response to your question, James, about what else is happening, it's really, it's imposter or impersonation scams. And look, the IRS is not the only federal department or agency that has this challenge, but it's a unique one for them, I think, because when it comes to the IRS, it's such a recognizable name. People know there is an IRS, and they have this, there's a level of familiarity with the agency. I know I have to interact with them, but it's only once per year. And it's this very myopic interaction, right? They don't understand, your general person taxpayer does not understand how the IRS operates outside of that filing process. And frankly, that's often handled by a tax preparer or even a, you know, a lot of the software platforms. So the confusion by the public about what else the IRS is going to do and how they're going to communicate and talk with you, it's really understandable. So we see so many different schemes. The bad actors will pretend to be the IRS, and then it's you owe back taxes, send us payment immediately, buy a gift card, or you're going to be arrested. And while those of us who work in this space go, well, first of all, you won't be arrested for non-payment of your taxes. The IRS doesn't accept gift cards as a form of payment. There would be a process that you have to go through. Your average person really doesn't know that. And they, frankly, most people respect the government. And when they say, hey, you owe this, they are going to respond. They want to resolve the issue. So those impersonation scams are really, they're well honed to get people to give up more of their credentials and information and their hard-earned money. And we see that in the call center, not just during tax time. It does ramp up, but we see it all year long.
Well, and with the introduction of generative AI, so artificial intelligence, we're also seeing those pitches get to be a lot better too. They're
so sophisticated and so polished.
Arlene, you know, Eva just described it. You know, we see this really all year round, and it does involve any number of kind of scams. Sometimes it's a text, sometimes it's an email, sometimes it's a phone call. And invariably it all comes down to, at some point, you know, they're going to ask for payment. And of course, my favorite, all time favorite, is that the scammer who is asking somebody for, you know, several hundred dollars worth of Apple, app cards,
iTunes gift cards,
iTunes gift cards. Because I know the IRS has just loads of them, right? You guys just back them up to the bank and send to the Department of Treasury and say, here's all our Apple cards. How does the IRS actually interact with people? And if somebody is wondering, is this really the IRS calling me? How would somebody go about verifying, hey, you know, I really do have to deal with someone at the Internal Revenue Service? That's the first question. Then I got a follow-up around younger people on that same topic. But how do people, how would they know if the IRS was or wasn't approaching them?
Well, typically, if the IRS was trying to approach you, our approach is we will first mail you a bill. So you would have a tangible document in your hand that we will mail to you saying that you owe the IRS, if you owe back taxes, or if we were requesting additional information from you, we will send a bill or a letter to your address of record. So we do not leave a pre-recorded or urgent or threatening message on your voicemail. You know, this tax scam, they come in very or many variations of phone scams where they're told, just like you said, Eva, to go and purchase gift cards. The criminals, or they have fake, or they have the spook caller ID numbers. And I even receive those type of calls, and the call happened to be my same number that's calling me on my phone. You know, for the life of me, I don't know how that happens, but it happens. Those are some of those fake calls that appear to be anywhere in the country. They're saying that they're from the IRS, but they're not. These are fraudsters that are trying to spoof, and they tell you that if they are calls from the local sheriff department or state department or any federal agency trying to get information, these are not legitimate calls because the IRS does not do that. We will never demand immediate payment using any specific payment method, no debit card, Apple card, crypto, none of that in order to pay a bill. We don't threaten or take any type of immediate action like calling the law enforcement. We do not demand taxes to be paid without giving you an opportunity to question or to appeal the amount that you owe. We have Publication 1, which is your rights as a taxpayer. We advise taxpayers to know your rights. We don't ask for credit card numbers over the phone. So it's just be familiar with the information on IRS.gov. If there's a legitimate call from the IRS, we don't call personally, but I, in education, we only maybe make a call to a tax professional to try to get them to discuss some education topics. We do not call to request or demand any type of payment. You should have a letter in the mail with a phone number of who to contact if you have questions about that. So what was your second question, Jim?
So the follow-up is this, that, you know, a lot of young people, you know, they don't necessarily know how to interact with the IRS. You know, they don't have years of experience of filing that annual tax return. Maybe their parents involved them or not, and maybe they taught them how to do it or not. But so for younger people, how do you educate them about the IRS and about both their responsibilities, but also for, you know, helping them to avoid somebody taking advantage of them by pretending to be the IRS because they just don't have any experience with it?
Well, since I'm in stakeholder liaison, and we provide education and outreach to the underserved, to the tax professionals, to community stakeholder partners. And so we are out there in some of the universities advising some of the students about their federal tax responsibilities, as well as the small business owners. We also have the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program, where they can volunteer to get the education about trying to prepare their tax returns, as well as maybe preparing tax returns for other taxpayers who may qualify for those services. You are right. There are a lot of students who work who do not know about the federal tax system. But again, they can find the information on IRS.gov about how to pay your taxes, about the federal withholding, about the small business tax workshops that we have that are available on our website, because everyone should know about the responsibility for filing and reporting your income. All income is taxable income unless it's exempt by law. And so the students, they're not exempt if they worked and they've earned money. So this is why I hope that we're doing this podcast, so we can help get the word out and share this information with the college students. But they can always give us a call, our toll-free number, or they can call us directly, in which we can provide that information or send us an email. And we will get out there in the college or universities to try to spread the word about their federal tax responsibilities.
Move on to a little bit different topic. Now, Eva, you know, once somebody is the victim of some kind of a tax ID issue or identity related tax fraud, you know, what should they do?
Well, first, I want to prevent people from that happening. So I always tell folks, if you get a reach in, if you receive an uninitiated communication, and I don't care if it's by phone, by text message, by email, by social media direct message, you don't have to engage. You can go to the source. So if you feel like maybe the IRS is trying to reach you and something's going on, you don't need to respond to that text, email, or phone call. You can contact the IRS directly. Now, we just talked about the phone number. You can go to irs.gov, get in touch with them directly and find out, hey, are you trying to get in touch with me? And then you'll know that you're actually talking to the IRS. Now, if you have engaged with someone and you're not sure, that's when I think it's really important to have a plan in place. And organizations like the ITRC, the FTC, even the IRS has resources. So get the help that you need. You don't have to navigate this by yourself. At the end of the day, whenever you're a victim of an identity theft or fraud, you do have to go directly to the entity where the fraud occurred. So in the case of the IRS, you will have to engage with the IRS, file the fraud complaint directly with them, but they make it pretty easy. The forms are available online. We can walk you through that process, and they have people that can answer your questions as well. So again, don't engage. If you get a reach in, go to the source, and then you can go either come to us or go directly to the IRS if you do believe that you are a victim.
Arlene, we've talked about some of these common scams that you know, we see from time to time, but I know you have something called the Dirty Dozen. So tell us about the Dirty Dozen.
It's a list of tax scams that are out there, and we're trying to help warn taxpayers, tax professionals, financial institutions to be aware of the various tax scams. We have the phishing and smizing, where taxpayers and tax professionals are using or receiving fake communication from those that are posing as legitimate organizations in the tax and financial communities. So when you take a look, and we do post the information on IRS.gov, where they'll see the list. Sometimes the list is from previous years, but then they recirculate. And so that's why we created the Dirty Dozen. You'll see some in prior years, as I said, that they you know, they did just start recirculating, because that's what the tax scammers are doing. You think that they're gone, but no, they come back. We also have the unscrupulous tax preparers. If you find a tax professional, and we have the information on our website on how to find or choose a tax professional, if you find someone who does not sign the tax return and you paid for a service and they don't put their PPIN number, these are called ghost preparers. They only appear just during the tax season when you need them after tax season. If you receive an IRS notice, they're nowhere to be found. So those are called unscrupulous tax preparers, which we categorize them as ghost preparers. We also have the promoters, and promoters are trying to get taxpayers, lure you into their office, because they're saying that they can get more money if you file the tax return through them. And so those are called too good to be true tax preparers. And so you want to stay away from them, because they're using improper methods in order to avoid paying taxes. So that Dirty Dozen gives you a list that we've identified, and some of the identification comes from you, because you tell us some of those tax scams that are out there, and we create the Dirty Dozen list. So make sure you visit irs.gov, just type in the search engine Dirty Dozen, and you'll see the list that we've identified as the Dirty Dozen tax scams for the current year.
If you've fallen for a tax scam, chances are you're vulnerable elsewhere, because a lot of times these fraudulent returns are filed or attempted to be filed using information stolen in data breaches. What should somebody do beyond the tax realm we've talked about? What are the other things people need to be doing to protect themselves? Or if they do think they've been the victim of a tax scam, what are the things they need to do to protect those other areas of their life?
Yeah, once you have become a victim of a tax scam, it does become about protecting your credentials. So that's the data about you, those things like your social security number, your financial account numbers, driver's license number, and those types of things. And so while it's not all related to IRS or taxes, there are things that you can do it's practicing good identity hygiene. So we always encourage people to freeze their credit. Just like for taxes, you get an IP PIN. Freezing your credit is sort of similar, in that even if someone has all of the data about you necessary to open new financial accounts, without that PIN, without being able to thaw or unfreeze your credit, they still can't do it. And it's very easy. You can do it at all three of the bureaus, and we have information that can walk you on our website, walk you through the process. It really isn't as cumbersome as I think people think it is. And then the other types of things, that it's just keeping your identity top of mind, doing things like upgrading your password game, using unique passwords, longer passwords across all of your different accounts. It doesn't have to be gobbledygook and make no sense. You can use a passphrase, as long as it's unique to the account. And then we also encourage people to turn on MFA, or multi-factor authentication, and on any of their online accounts. That's that extra layer of protection. So again, if in some way through a data breach or other compromise, if your login and password are compromised, they still can't access your account without that one-time use code. And that's what multi-factor authentication does for you. Now, there's a lot more to this, and we could go down a list of lots of different things that you can do. It can be a little daunting for people. So just start with those three. And as they become a habit, then you can start looking at other ways. And again, ITRC, we have all kinds of information about the things that you can do to practice good cyber and identity hygiene. But just start small, make it a habit, and don't be the low-hanging fruit for the fraudsters.
Yeah, Arlene, one more time. If somebody thinks they've fallen for a tax scam, what would you have them do?
So if you've fallen victim to a tax scam and your social security number was used to file a tax return claiming a fraudulent refund, this is considered to be a tax-related identity theft that has occurred. And so you sometimes will find that out if you filed a tax return and it's been electronically filed and the return rejects, then you are forced to file a paper return. In order to file that return, you're ineligible to file that electronically, so therefore you would need to submit a paper tax return. In a lot of cases, taxpayers are not aware that they've been a victim, and they don't find that out possibly until they try to electronically file. And some of it is innocent that someone has just transposed the number, and in some cases, it's not. So the IRS may send a letter to the taxpayer informing them that they've been a suspect of identity theft, and so because someone else has used their Social Security number. So individuals should respond to the notices, call the number that's on there. They can also complete, we have form 10439, which is the identity theft affidavit. And that is if the e-file return has rejected because there's a duplicate filing under the taxpayer Social Security number, then that's what we have advised them to do, fill out the form, and they can attach that form to their paper tax return and submit the return. Also, if you are a victim of tax-related identity theft, just continue. If you owe tax, go ahead and continue to pay that tax and file your tax return, even if you have to do so by paper. I know it will take longer to process, but you want to file the correct tax return so that we can remove and process and investigate the other return that was filed under that incorrect into your Social Security number and possibly income that was reported. So we also have, you can call. If you've been a victim of identity theft, you can call. We have specialized assistance at 1-800-908-4490. You can visit the ID Theft Federal Trade Commission. And then we also have resources and publications, which is on irs.gov. This year, I wanted to announce this, that we have the direct file. So if you qualify for direct file, we have 12 different states that is offering the pilot for direct file that taxpayers can file their tax returns for free. It's accurate and it's easy. So we always encourage taxpayers to file their tax returns electronically. However, if someone else has filed the return using your Social Security number and you become a victim, then make sure you file the form 14039. You can also verify your identity. You can visit the IRS website. Also, you may need to make an appointment at a taxpayer assistance center. And I like what Eva said about the multi-factor authentication. We have that with online banking, even with some of our doctor's office. If you do the online with them, we have to have the multi-factor authentication. And so we're no different. You need to have those layers there in order to protect your identity. So just wanted to make sure, you know, I included that information because there's someone out there that it still haven't filed. I know April 15th is right around the corner, but wanted to share that information about filing the tax return and possibly doing the direct file for free. And also, if you need to do an extension, it's not too late to do that, which is form 4868. So I hope I addressed your question. If there's anything else, then please let me know.
There's a wealth of information there. We're going to make sure that all of those phone numbers and web addresses are going to be on our website along with this podcast so people can have access to all that great information. We could talk forever about this, but alas, we you know, we do have to stop at some point. So, Arlene, thank you so much for your time and all of your expertise. And we wish you well and a happy tax season. And Eva, thank you as always.
Thank you, James. And I love that Arlene knows not only the phone number, she knows all the form numbers too. That's great.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for the invite. I've enjoyed it and look forward to working with you in the future on the next podcast.
Thank you very much. If you want to learn more about what we've discussed today, visit irs.gov Or check out our podcast transcript where you can find links to all of the resources Arlene mentioned today. If you think you've been the victim of an identity crime or you want to avoid becoming one, you can speak with an expert ITRC advisor about your identity issues. We're available on the phone. You can chat live on the web, text us, or send us an email during our normal business hours. Just visit idtheftcenter.org to get started. Join us next week for our sister podcast, The Weekly Breach Breakdown. Until then, thanks for listening.